The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the 06010. Fantasy Focus.
Welcome in to a very special edition of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast live. From parts unknown, just kidding. Where are we right now, Matthew?
We're in Indianapolis at the beautiful JW Marriott. We are at the NFL Combine, and we are in Stefania's room. Specifically, room 27.
How many points do you think this would cost a night if you were to stay here? Like, is there a nicer? I've never been in a hotel room this nice.
This is like a 50,000 point a night kind of night.
50,000?
Yeah, it's got to be.
I'm thinking six.
Stefania had like a, I've never seen this before, but Stefania, we had to get in, we had to meet on the lobby so Stefania could use her special card. Starfania has a black card, a JW Marriott black card that gets her up to this like special room where there's all sorts of security.
Don't you feel like it's good to use your intuition in life in general? Because I think
sure.
And what I mean by that is, so you kind of look at where you stand at ESPN based off where you're staying here at the hotels in Indianapolis.
Right.
Indianapolis downtown is a very hotel and restaurant city, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of hotels, a lot of restaurants, not a lot of downtown apartment complexes, etc.
No.
So we are part of this little strip here that starts with this nice, beautiful, stunning hotel.
And it's all connected by walkways and everything like that. And
so
all
you don't
leads
have to go outside,
to Lucas Oil Stadium. Right.
In February.
Leads to Lucas Oil Stadium and the convention center where the combine is happening.
So here we are in the JW Marriott on like at least the top floor. Like this might have been built specifically for Stefania's hotel room this week.
The word penthouse gets thrown around a lot, but I believe it's appropriate here.
It is appropriate in this
case. You have a lovely view, all glass on one side.
It's
you
amazing.
You can see out over the river.
I can see,
this is important.
There's a lot of stuff I can see out there.
That's right.
I certainly can see my hotel.
We can see the crappy hotel you're in.
That's a good point.
That's right.
Yeah.
We can look down upon the budget mototel that you're in.
But the good news, like my lift to get to my hotel was only $18. So it wasn't that expensive.
That's perfect. You know? Yeah.
What's it like, Stefania? How's the weather over here? You know?
Well, you know, it's because I travel a lot because I'm a hard worker.
Mm.
Yeah, just want to throw that out there. Like this is not...
When you boondoggle for a living... Like that's right. We have had issues about what you define as work, but yes, we will agree to you travel a lot.
Yes. I do because I bring the fans the news that they need to have, as evidenced by the fact that I contributed to an interview for today's podcast.
That's true.
I think Field contributed to several of the interviews we're going to hear on today's podcast.
That is true. Also,
how about you, Matthew? Who'd you get for today's podcast?
Secret Squirrel. I got Daniel Dock.
You laid that exclusive.
You know what? I got an exclusive from Daniel Dock.
Okay.
So
you can pipe down.
That's what I'm contributing.
Matthew got a 10 minute interview with Daniel and got to do a henna on Daniel's back of his favorite prospect this week.
Listen, Daniel, I could have said Daniel's unavailable. He's busy producing for the fantasy show on ESPN Plus. I'm a company man.
Da-da-da.
We don't have props.
Now we do.
And now we drops.
But instead, I said, no, Daniel, I will allow you to produce the 06010, the audio podcast. Yes. So I got us Daniel. So none of your beautiful little interviews with highfalutin executives happen without me granting you guys Daniel.
That's a very
You're
good
welcome.
Point. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year. Certainly, I know we all love
it
the combine.
I love
it's
it.
A great opportunity to meet and see some people. And we've all got people that we are close with in the NFL community. The great chance to actually see them in the flesh, because the reality of our work is we're in Bristol. We are bound to Bristol from like August 1st until January 1 every year. We don't travel to games every Sunday. This is a good opportunity to catch up with some people, which is what we're going to do over today and tomorrow. And
not all of us. I was going to say most of us are bound to Bristol. Some of us have conferences in Morocco and whatever.
Right.
And like whatever, medical conferences.
I think it was the multi-coast last year.
And Monaco and whatever, Egypt, you know. And like all,
didn't you stay
all
in Clooney's house? Didn't Clooney like give you like a...
Yeah, that's next year.
Yeah, oh, next year.
That's exactly
So the point of these podcasts is going to be like we had some conversations.
True story. 100% true story. You're joking about Clooney's house, but I will tell you that Stefania Bell within the last 6 months has had dinner at an insanely famous movie star's house. I'm not allowed to tell the story. I won't say it. It is Stefania's story to tell, but that has happened.
Someday.
A iconic, everyone knows this person's
A-list
name.
A-list celebrity. A-list celebrity.
Stefania sure to cheat me with The Rock, right?
A legit A-list movie star.
Oh, gosh. Well, we had some A-list guests today.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, we did.
Let's move along.
Some awesome guests. So yeah, that's what we're going to do. So today I had the chance to catch up with Titan general manager John Robinson, Packers head coach Matt LaFleur, Falcons general manager Thomas Dimitroff, and Stefania caught up with Jason Garrett, Cowboys head coach, and now the Princeton grad.
Fellow Princeton.
Very smart people.
Yes. Remember, I also talked to Daniel. Daniel, how are you? How are you doing?
Very well. My nipples are chafed. I'm wearing a shirt and it's very, I'm not used to that.
How was the flight in?
Flight was not too bad. I got to middle row, our middle seat, and I was between two people. And it was, I got the peanuts and they gave me the pretzels too, which was really cool. That doesn't usually happen. And then I had the non-reclining seat next to the bathroom at the very back. So it was all in all, it was a pretty, I mean, it's been a really fun evening.
It sounds like it is. And there you go. There's my exclusive interview with Daniel Dopp. There you go. You're not getting
Riveting
that insight anywhere
podcasting.
Else.
And podcast.
Right. Peace out.
No, just kidding. So let's get to it. So what we're going to do is we had these interviews and I think what the goal might be to try to put all of the audio in a podcast, you can listen to the full conversations.
Yep.
But we're going to use some of the most notable points from these conversations as our own jumping off points.
Right.
And maybe dig deeper into some of the things that were said. So we'll start with Titans GM John Robinson. When a guy doesn't have a ton of production in a category like Derek with a receiver, people assume that means not capable of doing something like that. How about as a receiver from Derrick Henry? Have we seen as much as we can, or is there a chance for him to flourish in that regard?
Yeah, no, I think he catches the ball. I mean, he's a big man in blitz pickup. You know, that's an important part of the passing game, to try to get around, you know, when he steps up in the hole and takes on a blitzing linebacker or somebody coming off the edge. He's a tough guy to get around. And he's really good in space. You know, you can get the ball out, you know, to him on some of that screen game stuff. He's not a real make miss guy. Not that to say he can't, that stylistically, he's a put his foot in the ground. And like once he gets rolling, I think we saw, evidence of him. He's not only big and strong, but he's also fast, in the open field. So he's a tough guy to catch.
So Derrick Henry, probably the best running back in football during the last quarter of last regular season. But we always think of Derrick Henry as just running through guys.
He certainly was, fantasy wise, the, best running back in football. And, it's interesting, by the way. He says he's not really a make you miss guy. I'm the same way. Like in basketball. In basketball, that's why I'm just...
You're just drained three guys.
That's right. When you're playing with the Harlem Globetrotters, you mean? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway... So
over the past 6 months, Stefania has been in a major movie star's house. Matthew's performed with the Globetrotters. Right. Meanwhile, like, I...
That's all right. You've been planning a wedding with
Chapin, the lovely
Chapin
Duke.
ChapinPicksThePield.com. Website's coming along nicely. Yes, I got that going for me, right?
There you go.
No, I can't even handle the social media of the wedding. Okay. But moving on.
Is
Derek
that the official
Henry.
Hashtag, by the way, Chapin Takes the Field?
Yeah, that's what we named our website. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I put a lot of effort in that website, so I appreciate all feedback.
I can't wait to check it out. ChapinTakesTheField.com. Presented by Vineyard Vines. Have we got a sponsorship deal yet?
No sponsor yet. Robust registry, though.
This space available. Any advertisers listening, heads up. So it's interesting. Like, Derrick Henry, to me, guys, is one of the most interesting guys coming into this season because, again, like, that last quarter of the season has to count for something, and he was all world. He literally won people their titles. And I know what John's saying, but still, like, Deonton Lewis played well last year. He is a good pass catcher. He is a make-you-miss guy.
So you're completely right, obviously, in the evaluation. And in the interview as well, we did talk about Deion a little bit. And you described him as sort of a change of pace back, the kind of guy you can play in up-tempo. My question on Derek was merely like, the initial question was, what did you learn about Derrick Henry this year? Because maybe as much as you think you know about Derrick, until you see it, like this level of production might have opened your eyes. Like maybe we can explore more with him.
I also think they didn't have a full season that was consistent to be able to evaluate him in this way. Remember, Marcus Mariota was hurt a lot at the start of the season. And so I think when their passing game was nothing, they only had their running game. It was very easy to key in on those two. And Derrick Henry was completely ineffective. And then all of a sudden they had to account for Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis sort of disappeared. So I don't feel like I understand what the identity of the Titans really is.
And by the way, again, it was coming up, new Packers head coach Matt LaFleur, former Titans offensive coordinator Matt LaFleur. So once again, there will be somebody else calling the plays.
The good news is, and not to cut you off here, borrow a play from your playbook, but the playbook should be the same. Sorry.
Right.
Should be the same in Tennessee. That was one of the things that I talked about with John was that, you know, Arthur Smith, who was previously their tight ends coach, is now their coordinator. And yes, it's a new coordinator for Marcus, but this is the first time it's been the same system 1 year to the next in a few years for him.
So at least the terminology is the same, but obviously Arthur's going to want to put his own imprint on it, different than Matt. And to Stefania's point, there was a lot of turmoil, if you will, or just, you know, not consistency because of health and various issues going on with the Titans players. And so to me, I feel like I don't know what John Ant. I mean, we heard a little bit of the clip there, but for me, if you'd ask me, what did we learn about Derrick Henry? To me, the answer is that this is a guy that's effective when the fourth quarter starts if he's already had 15 touches. Like that's a guy that just needs to be fed. You need to use that physical size. He's not a make you miss guy. He's a run through you guy. And so, like, you need to wear him down. Like, Derrick Henry's for a specific kind of play of football.
And it helps when you're playing with the lead and the Titans being a better team next year, we hope, or I should say they hope. I guess we hope too.
Tighten up.
Would help them. Tighten up. but Derrick Henry is certainly a player to keep an eye on to your next.
Have you done your rankings for next year yet?
I have, yeah, but yeah. I can't tell you that I have great, recall of where everybody stacks up.
Of course.
I want to say top like 15 or so for Derrick Henry.
I think I was slightly lower on him, but again, I think that's one that he's a guy who I think whose ADP will fluctuate throughout as we get more information about how the Titans are going
because without those final weeks of the season, there's no way.
Oh, yeah.
Top 15 is pretty high.
But think about how your projections change. I mean, there are people that are nervous now about Todd Gurley.
100%.
After what happened from week 15.
Raising my hand. I'm one of them.
All right, so let's get to the next piece of sound here, which is Corey Davis. I asked him about Corey Davis, their third-year wide receiver, and just how does he make that stride in year three?
I think there are a couple of games. Philadelphia is one that comes to mind. New England comes to mind as well, where you can make a case Corey Davis is the best player on the field in those games. How does he take the next step? What is the next step for him as he gets into, year three of his NFL career? Yeah, I think, I think the continuity will certainly help him too, from a route concept standpoint, your alignments, your splits, what you're looking at, what you're calling this coverage, how you're IDing certain things, the mental component of the game. It'll be a little less for him to have to learn something, a new nuance so he can play faster. But I think he certainly showed throughout games during the 18 season, he's got good size, he's got good speed, he's a really good route runner. He's got what we call snap down at the top of the route where he can really drop his weight and get out of his break to create some space for the quarterback to throw. So that, the quarterback's got to be accurate, but maybe not quite as accurate if you've created some room, against the DB there. So, really proud of the steps that he took last year and look forward to him, continuing to improve.
Important year ahead for Corey Davis. I wonder if Corey Davis's career feels a lot different if he's playing in a different offense these past 2 years. And that is not to say that the Titans didn't make the right pick, but more just that they've been ground and pound and they've had quarterback injuries over the past two seasons that he's got,
Well, not just quarterback injuries.
He wasn't healthy at the start of last year. Or a couple years ago when he was a rookie, he struggled because of the injury concern.
He basically missed the first half of the season with that hamstring injury, Stefania. Yep. I remember you and I talking about every week, is this the week for Corey Davis?
Right.
And eventually he finally came around in the second half of the season. And I would agree with you, Field. I don't know that, it was nice to hear what John had to say about Corey Davis, but I don't think Corey Davis's production is a Corey Davis issue. The target share was there. The talent is evident when you watch the tape. It's a Marcus Mariota issue.
Well, so remember Mike Clay, who does obviously the cornerback wide receiver matchups.
I don't remember that guy. Who?
Oh, he's a Bill Barnwell guest.
Oh, yeah. I have heard him.
Right, yeah. He's often on a Barnwell show, yes. Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
I heard Katie Nolan is interested in having him on. Yep. Yeah.
Mike Clay has his own Chip and Kit song. So.
That's true.
Yeah, you can have, what's their website that you can donate via email? Sorry, I'm putting on the spot.
Wow, that is on the spot.
Just go listen to a podcast episode from December and get other information. Then, anyways, Mike Clay is a cornerback wide receiver matchup,
yep.
And for a while it was like the murderer's row for Corey Davis, right? It was all the best cornerbacks he faced.
Yep.
Then that Patriots game came around, and Stephon Gilmore was legitimately the best cornerback in football this year. Patriots best player, they're the best team, and he lit him up. So there are days where Corey Davis looks like a superstar. And maybe you're right. Maybe this is more about Marcus Mariota than it is Corey Davis. So then I guess the question becomes this: is the value capped on Corey Davis if Marcus Mariota remains the quarterback? Are you a believer that he can make
I'm not a Marcus Mariota believer. So, I think it honestly depends on do you believe that this Titans offense is suddenly going to open up? Or are they going to be hey, we've got something with Derrick Henry and, we're going to play good defense and we're going to run the ball and pound it and we'll try to do some RPOs with Mariota and use his legs and occasionally we'll throw it to Corey Davis or Jonnu Smith or whatever. But, so it depends on how you view the Titans offense. I think it's going to be a conservative offense, and I'm not a Marcus Mariota believer. I need to see some sort of consistency. You see flashes of it. You see throws that you're wow, he'll throw a back shoulder 30-yard pass in between two defenders and hit a guy in the hands, and you're oh my God. And then the very next play, he'll overthrow a running back by 5 yards. And you're how is that the same guy?
consistency is key in the NFL. So that's certainly, I think that's the theme.
And that's an issue for him, right? Is that fair?
No, that's fair. And that's, so I think that the Titans hope and, Arthur Smith, the new coordinator, hopes, Mike Vrabel, the head coach, John Robinson, the GM, all hope that this can be the year. It's rare that a quarterback puts it all together in year five, but it's not impossible.
It's certainly not impossible. He certainly has the pedigree and we've seen flashes of it. And if he puts it all together, Corey Davis is going to really benefit. The concern though is that if he doesn't, and you've got two guys that have dealt with injuries in Mariota and Corey Davis. And again, if the light doesn't come on for Mariota and Arthur Smith and Mike Vrabel are like, you know what? Maybe the guy isn't the guy. Maybe we should just try to focus on other positives of our offense, which would limit Corey Davis.
Fun fact, Arthur Smith's father founded FedEx. There's got to be a delivery joke there, waiting in the wings for week one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And Tennessee, right near there. Memphis. Yeah. Yeah, and
why don't you work on that in the offseason?
I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to noodle on that. I'm going to workshop it.
Workshop that one.
Daniel and I are going to take it out on the road.
Matthew's going to stew on it until July 4th. We're going to tell DJ Gallo he's going to have a joke by dinner time for us ready instead.
Yeah.
Let's get to, by the way, thanks to John Robinson.
By the way, and Mike Vrabel uses UPS. Weird. I'm going to just throw that out there. I'm just going to start that rumor.
Packers head coach Matt LaFleur also joined the show. The first head coach hired during this coaching cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways, maybe the most desirable head coaching job that was available of the eight, or at least right there in the mix. And for a lot of that's because of Aaron Rodgers in people's view. But the running backs were where we had some interesting conversations. And as much as Matthew and many others wisely wanted to free Aaron Jones, some thoughts here about the idea of multiple running backs.
Obviously, you haven't coached them yet, but just thinking back, I mean, over the past, 2 years, at least four of the several key young guys on this offense, between Aaron and Jamal in the backfield, I mean, you probably scouted those guys during the process. Do you have any recollections of them? And then how does that mesh with what you may see for them going forward in your offense?
Yeah, I'm really excited about those two guys because I think in today's NFL, you have to have more than one back I think that position in particular takes more punishment than any other position out there.
Sure.
So certainly to have two backs of that caliber, I think they give us, they're both very versatile and give us, just a little bit more, than just runners. I think they're going to add some value to the passing game as well.
All right. So Matthew. So first of all, like the sound that we're grateful for, all the sound that we're getting from a fantasy standpoint, though, it might make you like, does that frustrate you to hear that, Matthew?
We just got rid of the old guy. can we fire him again? Like, what? Field.
We want to hear.
You had him in front of you. How did you not strangle him and be like, dude, free Aaron Jones?
Dude, so first of all, like, I wonder if Matt, like, even is aware of, like, the free Aaron Jones movement, right? Like, I always wonder if his coach is like, you think they see it, you know? They're all in
tune. That would have been a good question to ask him.
I guess I forgot to follow that one up.
But real question.
Yeah.
Do you think part of that is him just sort of couching it and I don't want to commit to anything and be that outspoken coach right now and I'm just going to see what I got when I get to camp versus this is how he really feels, like he's a multiple back believer?
I would say this. We came here obviously to collect sound. We are also mindful of the fact that the sound in February could be, you have to, first of all, Matt LaFleur has spent exactly 0 minutes talking football with any of his players. He is prohibited by rule to speak to them until April, which I know it sounds ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And he also, we were talking even before the interview got going about how it's like, you know, you think you're going to take this job and evaluate your team. He's still catching up on the Packers roster. Like there's still time, there's still tape to watch. That being said, I think being in this league, you probably know a little bit about the chops and the instincts of these players. And as much as we wanted, you know, free Aaron Jones is a good thing. Jamal Williams played really well during those last 3 or 4 games when Aaron Jones was hurt with that knee injury.
Jamal Williams is fine. I think Aaron Jones is special. Jamal Williams is a competent and professional running back.
What do you mean by special, though?
Do you feel like he's a little better than that, though, Jamal Williams?
He might be a little bit better than that.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because that offense was so broken by the end, you know, and so it's hard to really get a good sense of what, you know, like, and the passing game was broken, and obviously Aaron missed some time as well, and so you're able to key on run game. I just think, here's what I said a year ago. I said this like last spring where I said, and I said this on the podcast and I said this on Twitter, I said, Aaron Jones is the best running back on that team and he will have that job by midseason. I repeated that all throughout the preseason and you go look at like my bold predictions and everything like that. And so, and I believe the same thing. I believe that whatever level you think Jamal Williams is, Aaron Jones is better. He's a better running back. And I believe Matt LaFleur, if he knows anything about football, and I certainly think
he does
yeah. right? He's a smart guy. Mm-hmm. There's a reason he's had so much success at such a young age. He's a smart guy. He's going to get there. He's going to watch the tape. He's going to be around him, and he's going to want to win. And the way you win is by getting your best playmakers on the field. The issues, the reasons, quote unquote, that Aaron Jones didn't get on the field last year were because of pass production. Those issues aren't there. Aaron Rodgers has come out publicly and basically said, like, we need to get, you know, Jones there. So I agree. I think Stefania's point is very well taken here, which is that it's a new coach. He wants everyone to, hey, we're going to compete and blah, blah, blah. But I believe that talent will ultimately win out. And, I believe last year that a year from now that and when the start of the season happens, Aaron Jones will be the Packers running back you want to have on your team.
There's also a youth movement at wide receiver for the Packers last year. Let's hear some of his thoughts on the young guys. They drafted 3 wideouts last year in 2018. Specific to the passing game, obviously some, you know, you've got Randall as a pending free agent, Geronimo Allison as a pending free agent, but some of the young guys that we know are going to be around drafted 3 wide receivers last year. Mm-hmm. And one guy in particular, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, seemed to show up production-wise on a couple of different occasions. Him and Equanimeous, bigger guys. What have you seen from them based off of what they did last year and how they might project going forward? You certainly have worked with plenty of young wide receivers throughout your career.
Yeah, I'm really excited about those guys. You talk about 3 young guys that are obviously very talented, but I think they have a skill set. They're big receivers, but they can all run, and that is going to be critical to the success of our offense, is having guys that can take the top off the coverage, and I think all 3 of those guys can do that.
So Jamon Moore is the other player he's referencing, the Missouri 4th-round pick, I think it was, last year. Didn't really get on the field that much,
right?
But ultimately, when you have a couple other contributors, the rookie spot, a wide receiver spot, you know, someone's got to sit. So interesting. Matt LaFleur, by the way, him and his brother Mike is a very good coach for the 49ers. They both have worked closely with wide receivers in their careers, so I like their evaluation skills. But do we think that the Packers' second wide receiver job belongs to a player currently on the roster? Because we think Devontae Adams is the number one, obviously. Feel pretty good about that.
You know, I mean, I know you tweeted out, like, boy, I would love to see Antonio Brown with the Packers.
I'll say it once, I'll say it again. I mean, I've said it once, I'll say it again. Absolutely would love that.
Right. And by the way, it makes sense on a lot of levels. Makes sense from Pittsburgh's standpoint, get him out of the AFC.
Yep.
Makes sense from Green Bay's point of view, in addition to the fact that he's Antonio Brown. But there's a window on Aaron Rodgers. Like, you have the best quarterback in football, but you don't have him for long. Like, you know, not everyone's going to be Tom Brady and playing when they're 41. And I mean, so there's a window here with Aaron Rodgers still in his prime where you want to, you know, and so it's one of those that makes sense on paper, doesn't make sense, you know, in the minds of the Packers, and they obviously have a lot of team needs, and maybe they feel good about their young wide receivers. I do think Randall Cobb will be moving on. And the interesting thing that, you know, and maybe Coach LaFleur doesn't know yet, but it'd be interesting to see where Marquez Valdes-Scantling lines up, because his production last year came when Randall Cobb was in and playing the slot.
Right.
When they moved MVS to the slot last year, kind of disappeared. And I don't know how much of that is a result of, you know, lack of confidence in that position or just how those games went. You know, I haven't done a deep dive there yet, but that'd be interesting to know for me where they plan to play him.
I'm just sitting here thinking Antonio Brown's a creative route runner and Aaron Rodgers is a scramble. Like, the two of them could create such a mismatch because nobody's going to be able to predict where they're going to go. And this has been something, this downfield threat has been missing. You didn't have a healthy enough Rodgers to be able to get the ball downfield, essentially playing on one leg, and you didn't have that receiving option for him.
There is obviously considerations other than just what takes place on the field, but I am telling you, in so many ways, it makes so much sense. Should we move on to what Falcons GM Thomas Dimitroff had to say? Let's go to
Before we move on, I will just very quickly say, in terms of the wide receivers, it's Devontae Adams and then everyone else. And I think, you know, Valdes-Scantling or St. Brown or whatever, they're going to be sleepers. But until we know who, quote unquote, the number two is, I don't think you're doing anything other than taking a late round flyer. Before you move on to Dimitroff, I should just mention that if you hear an edit in this podcast, it's because Stefania's turn down service came in the middle of, we heard a knock on the door and we're like, who's knocking? Who's bothering us? Turns out it's turn down service. I didn't get turn down service.
They brought a warm towelette for Stefania.
Champagne,
some chocolates. Thanks for offering one of those.
Yeah. Stefania had to turn down the turn down service.
No.
I don't even think my room got cleaned today at my hotel. I think I have to go to vacuum myself.
Well, you made your bed. You like making your own bed in a hotel room. So there you go.
Now you have to go lie in it.
If it makes you feel better, and I believe this is also the case for Stefania.
You guys ignored my joke.
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
I said he made his bed and now he has to go lie in it.
Oh, yes. There
I gotta
you go.
Repeat that.
Very clever. Nice job, Princeton. listen, we're hating you. We all have room envy here. If it makes you feel any better, yeah. I had to. I don't know if ESPN booked your – ESPN gets a room block at certain hotels. So, right. Like, here at the JW Marriott, they have a room block. Like, Adam Schefter is staying at this hotel, right?
Ooh,
you know,
sweet.
I'm sure Mel Kiper is staying at this hotel. Like, our big stars,
this is his
right?
first combine in, like, 30 years. You know that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. I saw it. I took a picture with him. It's awesome. And so Mel and Todd are both here. Legends.
Todd comes here every year.
I know.
Anyway, Mel, because he's in such demand, it's impossible for him to be around here. Everybody just wants to interview him.
It is impossible for Mel to do his job if he's here. It's, right. I'm dead serious. So, at any rate, we are not in the room block. I had to hustle to get my own room. I had to make my own reservations. Yeah. I'm not in the room block.
You and hustling doesn't happen. Right. Yeah. Let's move on.
Why, you know, none of us are in rooms as good as Stefania.
I'm staying in Quentin Nelson's guest apartment in the suburbs of Indiana. It's a good thing he's so rich. He has a mind, you know. I Airbnb'd off Quentin Nelson.
I took an Airbnb from Curtis Painter.
Curtis Painter, that's old school. Next up here, Falcons GM Thomas Dimitroff and wide receivers drafted in the first round have not been great of late. Calvin Ridley, he's the exception. Of the past four first-round draft classes, only one player, Calvin Ridley, has reached 10 touchdowns, which is a big number no matter what. But there has been somewhat of an it's almost like the first year of the NFL for these guys is like their graduate year of college more so than it is their first year in being in the pro. Specific to Calvin, what did you see this year that allowed him to produce right away? And then where's the opportunity for him to grow? It feels like a lot for a guy after 10 touchdowns, but where can he get better?
You know, Calvin Ridley, again, we're very, very fortunate to pick him where we did, of course.
Steal.
Yeah. We were honed in on a number of other positions there. There was a run on O lineman during that time where we started thinking, like, this is going to fall in our area. And sure enough, it did. It was a really important acquisition for us. He has so much, there's something about him. I mean, you want to talk about a fiery, passionate, football driven guy. I mean, we knew it from the day he came in. He was such a good person within, not only on the field, but off the field, so the guys were really behind him, right? So Julio Jones 100% wanted to help lead him. That was a big thing. So did Mohamed Sanu. So did Matt Ryan. Everyone wanted to be around this kid. Yes, he had things to learn and grow. He ran really, really sweet routes, right? His ability to stop and start and separate was really amazing. I was, when we looked at the workouts before he got drafted, we were thinking, like, I've not seen someone be able to separate as he does, and the way that his body moved, right? That was a big thing for us. He had an element of confidence, but he was still growing and young, and he had an element of humbleness as well with that. Where I think he was thriving too, though, is being in an organization like Dan, and Dan being open to, hey, if you're good enough, you will play. You'll either start or you'll play a lot. It doesn't matter if you've been here for a matter of minutes, so to speak.
Sure.
We have an organization that is open to that, right? Play the guys who are the best players there, and unfortunately for some of the older guys, if they get beat out, then they get beat out. It's not, no disrespect to them. So I think that's a big part of why he was thriving, because we gave him so much confidence along the way to believe in himself and say, hey, just go for it, man.
So that's Calvin Ridley, of course, who had a breakout year. Well, again, not a breakout. He had a terrific rookie year.
I loved him going into the season.
Yeah, Stefania, very smart. 10 touchdowns there, almost 850 receiving yards for Calvin Ridley. Do we think, though, so is it possible that the fantasy points go up, Matthew, because the touchdown regression, not to sound Mike Clay on you, but
yeah,
probably. I mean, 10 touchdowns in back-to-back years is hard to do.
Yes, it is.
Going into last year,
Devontae had to play on a team with Julio Jones.
But also, didn't he, to be fair, those touchdowns came in clusters. I think
he had a touchdown game once. He had 3-2-1 in three games.
Right.
And this is not an indictment of Calvin, but like a touchdown regression could be possible. But is a better fantasy year also likely? Because
no,
I mean, really?
I think Calvin Ridley will have a better NFL season next year and a less stellar fantasy season. Like, I think he will improve as an NFL wide receiver and yet probably wind up with less fantasy points again, because 10 touchdowns are just, that's so fluky to happen.
So here's my question, though, is that, okay, the raw points might be fewer, but is it possible that, like, week to week you can actually predict the outcome for Calvin Ridley more?
Maybe. It has been a long time. I mean, you have to go back to, like, you know, decent Roddy White, when there has been a number two receiver opposite Julio Jones who's been a consistent, usable fantasy force. Calvin Ridley had his moments this year, but they came and went, and then, you know, and then there's a couple of Mo Sanu games, and, you know, and it feels like Austin Hooper's taking a step as well. So, like, love Ridley and Dynasty, totally get it. Just, you know, I mean, for me, I think, yes. I would agree with your inner Mike Clay and say I think regression is probably going to come to Calvin Ridley statistically, even though he may be a better NFL player.
I don't know that the two are mutually exclusive. Like, I think he can have better week-to-week production. I don't necessarily know that touchdown numbers are going to go down. I think we've seen with the Falcons that there's sort of this inconsistency in terms of who's the dominant receiver from week to week. And a lot of the personnel isn't really changing, at least in the passing game. So I don't know that those games won't happen where you won't get the three touchdown spikes from him. However, I still think he's going to also develop and improve as a receiver and maybe steps up to be that number two guy. I thought his comment, Dimitrov's comment, was interesting about the confidence and they sort of like to let him go, because I think that's a big issue for wide receivers coming in as rookies to the league. And Calvin Ridley had a problem with drops. And if you were worried as a young receiver, like, oh my God, if I continue to drop, this is going to really hurt my status with the team. If they were sort of giving him the way, and we saw him have some drops, sure, then I think that he comes into next season more advanced as a second year wide receiver than we typically see.
Well, also, by the way, veteran team around him. So here's a kid that's obviously been embraced, and like you hear him talk about just kind of the kind of character he is, kind of kid he is. And also, by the way, like those Alabama kids, like, there's not a school that prepares players for the pros more than Alabama, right? You need to have physical skill, obviously. You need to have the work ethic, everything like that. But, like, if you had player X who, you know, if everything was equal and you had player X with the exact same physical ability at every single college, I'd want player X from Alabama versus player X from any other college.
Yeah, readiness is certainly one of their strengths.
I mean, it's right. I mean, you just, I mean, yeah, you know, like
it's
the way
it's the NFL team, the 33rd NFL team.
Yeah, the way Saban runs it. I mean, it is. And so there's something to be said for that.
It took every fiber of my being to not ask Thomas Dimitrov if Julio Jones is overrated. I did ask about Julio. You can find the full audio in there.
I do think that Calvin Ridley is the most underrated wide receiver on that team.
Just balance it out. You've got the Falcons properly rated based off Julio's over and Calvin's underratedness. All right, last thing here from Thomas Dimitrov. Interesting. Maybe we kind of have a sense of where Tevin Coleman might be playing next year. Mm-hmm. At running back, you've got, I think, sort of a good problem, maybe a high society problem. You've got Devontae under contract. You drafted Ito last year. Tevin, we know, is headed for free agency. So how do you balance the reality of Devontae and Ito being a big part of the offense next year with the desire to potentially want to keep Tevin, understanding that it may have to be that you come back and you're part of a trio as opposed to the lead guy, which you were in essence for the last 12 or so games of the season?
Look, to get Devontae Freeman back is going to be so important for us. And, you know, he's working hard to get healthy, of course, and that was a tough year for him. He's such an important part to our organization, so it's important for us and our run game and what we're doing now with our offense that he comes back full force. Tevin had a heck of a year last year. That's tough, right? As you know, it's really difficult to pay two running backs in this system.
It is, yep.
I think he's going to have a great opportunity out in free agency. We'll continue to monitor that. I never say never in those situations. You just never know. I know that, you know, I want the best for him. We do as an organization. He put his best foot forward for us, so that was important. Per Ito, I mean, to bring a guy in as we did with him and be pleasantly surprised how quickly he came along, like, that was a really important thing for us. I mean, his vision, his ability to stop and start. I mean, you want to talk about a body control athletic guy. That was really intriguing for us as we started seeing him grow, and he's going to be an important part for us, right? Whether he's a number two or whether he's a number three, or we're this whole, you know, this rotation that we're going to have will be interesting. We would like, you know, we have Brian Hill back. We drafted him a couple years ago. He went to Cincinnati, came back. He's really matured since he's been back. Sure. So he's a guy that has a little bit more size for us. It would be nice to continue to have a guy in there that's 25 to 30. You know, 225 to 30 is an important thing for us. So hopefully Brian continues to develop that way as well. So it's good for us.
Hard to pay two running backs, so it sounds like Tevin Coleman almost assuredly will be elsewhere next year.
Yeah, Tevin will have opportunity, a lot of opportunity in free agency. I think that tells you that.
But I simultaneously enjoy the doubling down of Devontae Freeman there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, he's the guy, and it's the unquestioned guy.
It's got to feel good for Devontae Freeman to hear that from the organization, because I think if you were to poll the fantasy audience, let me ask you, Matthew, if you were, would you have that kind of confidence?
Well,
in
I remember
Freeman?
I drafted him in one league, and I turned to you and asked you, and you gave me a kind of a, I don't know about them knees. Mm-hmm. Like, you gave me that kind of like a,
did it sound
I don't
like
know.
That?
Yeah. She did.
Through gritted teeth.
Yeah. Oh, you can't see the face out there in
Stefania
the audio
land. Stefania
didn't
feel good about it. And Stefania, of course, proved correct, which is one of the annoying things about Stefania, is that when she gives you injury news about a player and you don't want to hear it, and then you're like, well, she's probably wrong about that. And of course she's never is. So it's super annoying about her. But, Ito Smith becomes pretty interesting. Despite the fact that he didn't win me a board bet against Field. I'm nervous about Devontae Freeman coming to the season, Stefania.
It's hard not to be, because you need to see it first, right? I love that the organization is confident. They have to have a reason to feel that way. I remember that Devontae Freeman, there was some talk about that he might even try and come back and play at the end of last year. And I kind of felt like that was a player who really wants to prove himself, because there's something to show, like, look, I really can do this at the end of the season. They collectively made the decision to have him sit out, and I'm sure that was for the best. But yeah, it's reasonable to be nervous, because you're going off past history, and we have not seen him be fully healthy. So I think for fantasy purposes, we will be appropriately nervous when the season approaches, but we also are hearing that the Falcons are committed to him, and they feel strongly about him.
And the positives are, he's still a young guy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And to the general manager's point, like, he got paid. So
he got paid.
Let me ask you this question. Devontae Freeman, understanding we saw what Ito Smith did last year when he was given that, you know, role to be able to is he a guy that is going to be you feel comfortable if he is the handcuff to you draft Devontae Freeman, that he can handle a full workload? You're not worried about any of it. Like, obviously he's the handcuff, but
I thought he was fine last year. I didn't think he was great last year.
He was fine.
But if opportunity knocked, because Devontae Freeman was out, there's too much goodness in that offense, right? Mm. There's too much good. I mean, there's too much potential.
Is that turned down service?
Opportunity?
It's turned down service. It's not opportunity. It's turned down service once again for Stefania. That's what that is.
All right, so good stuff there, and appreciate all these general managers and coaches making time. But let's turn now to Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett, who we all think about the Cowboys acquiring Amari Cooper at midseason last year. Turns out they've had their eyes on him for quite some time.
Amari Cooper was a huge find for you guys last year during the season. And fantasy players care a lot about Amari Cooper, because he was not productive for them when he was with Oakland. He comes to Dallas. He's suddenly a number one. He's a star. What do you anticipate for him going into next season when he has the benefit of the full offseason, having been with you guys? How do you see his role going into this next year?
Well, we loved Amari coming out of school. He was drafted a top five pick by Oakland, so we didn't have an opportunity to get him. But he just was such a productive player at one of the best programs in the country, and you heard so many good things about him as a guy. And so when you have that combination of things, it's always curious. You kind of follow those guys to see if it plays out the way you think it will. And I think if you look at his career in Oakland early on, he was a very productive mm-hmm. player, a Pro Bowl player. He caught a lot of balls and did a lot of good things for them. And we had an opportunity to bring him to our team. We felt like he was going to have a big impact. And the thing I was most impressed by was how quickly he acclimated himself to our system of football. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. The middle of the year, you come in, all of a sudden the formations are called different things. The language of the offense is different. But he picked things up really quickly and was really productive right away. And he and Dak had a great rapport.
Right
from the get-go. And they made a lot of big plays together. And he certainly, again, had a huge impact on our team. You know, the question about going forward, what we're excited about is a chance to be with him in the off season. You know, throw routes on air in April or May together, leading up to the OTAs, and start to lay a little bit of a foundation. When you come mid-year, you know, you're kind of catching everything on the run. And again, I thought they did a great job, but we're excited to see him, you know, going through the off-season program and growing and developing together.
Amari Cooper certainly made a lot of people very happy after that acquisition. And it's scary to think that he did that on the fly. Was without practice. I mean, not without practice. And they traded for him during their bye week. But wasn't still, like, he had a full training camp, bunch of them to develop that rapport. Top 10 wide receiver going into next year.
I think he's borderline, yeah.
I think we saw him be more consistent there, mm-hmm. too. I mean, that was really the problem in Oakland. It was never a question of the talent. It was all about the consistency for him. And part of that was his performance. Part of that was everything around him. And you heard Jason mention the rapport that he developed with Dak. If those two come at it and they have these this chance to work from April forward, I can only for me, I did not want Amari Cooper on my fantasy team last year. Now I am targeting Amari Cooper as a fantasy wide receiver.
I wanted him. I was all in on Amari Cooper last year. And thank you, Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott, for bailing me out.
Because it
was
that, right?
Looking up like a pretty terrible call for the first half of the season. But, you know, and I think Jason brings up a great point. Coach Garrett brings up a great point there, which is, again, like, you think about your offensives. You're a coach, right? And you're a staff, and you're going into a season, and you sort of, all right, what do we have? And at this time last year, they're like, okay, we're probably not having Dez back. It's going to be Allen Hurns and Cole Beasley, and, you know, and we'll draft this kid. They get Michael Gallup, and, like, it's a bunch of, like, I don't know, Terrence Williams, and, you know, and so they're like, you know what? We should just play good defense and run the heck out of the ball, which they did, right? And so, once again, a heavy dose of Ezekiel Elliott. And then you get Amari Cooper and you get this toy and you're like, all right, let's take some shots here. But now you come into the season and now you've got so many more weapons to play with. I thought Gallup developed nicely last year. And now you've got a Cooper who has truly developed into a legit number one wide receiver. Zeke is still Zeke, right? And so, and it's still a pretty good defense. So I think if you're a Cowboys fan, you're feeling pretty good about this. And as a fantasy player, you have to be excited about, you know, Garrett, who is a creative offensive mind and just hasn't been able to, you know, given the pieces that he's had, hasn't been able to really utilize that yet. So it'll be interesting and I think fun to see what they cook up in this offseason with a full year to prepare.
And it's not just Amari Cooper's first full offseason. It's really Michael Gallup's first full offseason.
Sure.
As a rookie, it's kind of an abbreviated offseason. And Jason Garrett also commented on Michael Gallup.
While we're talking about wide receivers, Michael Gallup, obviously he stepped up for you, looked great at the end of the year, especially when now people are paying more attention in the playoff game to Amari Cooper. Gallup has some success. What do you see for him going into next year?
It's hopefully continue to develop. And obviously we liked him a lot coming out. We drafted him in the third round. But like a lot of young players, there were some bumps for him early on. And what you're excited about is he learned from them. Mm-hmm. He didn't go away. He did a lot of positive things. He learned from his experiences as he went. You know, there were probably a couple plays early on in the year that he felt like he should have made, some competitive catches. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, he took great pride in being that kind of a receiver in college. And he said, okay, I got to do a better job there. And you could see him focus on it and get better and better and become more and more confident as the year went on. And you said it, played big in the playoff game, but played really well, you know, really over the course of the second half of the season. I think Amari had a big impact on that. He got some better one-on-one opportunities as a result of Amari being part of our offense. But he took advantage of it, made a lot of big plays for us.
All right, so Michael Gallup, a player drafted in the third round, Colorado State, for a while seemed like he had a chance to be the Cowboys' number one wide receiver. Every year there are players that make a big leap from year one to year two, and it sounds like this could be a guy that the Cowboys are counting on to see that kind of production from.
Well, and you heard Jason say that he benefited from the presence of Amari Cooper, and once people are paying more attention to, oh, we have to cover Amari Cooper, it opens up opportunities for Michael Gallup. I think maybe even there was a pressure relief for him, because once Amari Cooper was there, I think he was thrust into a role where people were hoping for big things from him, and he wasn't ready to deliver that. And Amari Cooper being there helped him, and I think when you get the two of them working this offseason with Dak, they have a chance to have a nice 1-2 punch there.
The question is whether there's enough volume.
That was the question I was going to ask you. Is this offense designed for two wide receivers?
I asked you first.
I'm not there yet. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't, especially because, first of all, Zeke got super involved in the passing game last year. That it's almost like three wide receivers are going to have some sort of mark made. I don't want to totally discount that possibility, but I still believe the Cowboys found like their defensive resurgence last year, that like their style of play, as we know, when they beat the Saints in convincing fashion, whatever it was, like 13-10. I know that doesn't sound convincing, but the point was they stopped the freight train of New Orleans. Yeah. That at the end of the year, some teams, and Chicago did it all season, but like the Saints to a degree, the Cowboys, the Patriots in the playoffs, like they won their games with defense. The Cowboys might have an idea, a vision of this roster being, let's smother you defensively and offensively, grind it out. 24 points a game might work.
Yeah, and listen, you run Zeke into the line four or five times, you set up play action, and boom, you hit Cooper for a big one, and then, you know, call it a day. And yeah, I mean, I think Cooper, I think Michael Gallup's going to be a very nice NFL player for the Cowboys next year. And I think he's going to have some, you know, some decent games, some nice games here, but I don't know that there's going to be enough production, for him, in that offense as currently constructed. Here's a question for you two, lovely people. Who would you rather have, Michael Gallup or Calvin Ridley?
I think Calvin
Ridley. Ooh, that's tough. Oh, which two of us were you talking to? Sorry.
He said you two lovely people.
I know, so that's why I thought he was talking to me.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
I'm taking Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, me too.
I loved Calvin Ridley going into last year. I think what's interesting, and just to tease that we will have more of these sound bites that come later, but Jason did acknowledge the workload for Zeke and that they're mindful of the fact that it's so easy because he can do so much that he can be touching the ball, I should say, so many times in a game. And there is something to be mindful that, but he had to carry it when they didn't really have the passing game. Be interesting to see if they feel like they have a better passing game, if that shifts at all.
Higher volume offense. I think, you know, the Falcons were devastated by injuries, but defense that's not as talented as the Cowboys makes it more shootout prone.
Correct.
Better quarterback and a better player, right? I mean, there's a guy that was drafted 24th overall, right, and slid to 24. And there's a guy that went in the third round, like, for a reason, right?
Right.
Not that he's a bad player, but just, I think, overall ability.
No, I agree with that. I think better chance at, you know, higher scoring games, too, right, in terms of pace of play. You know what I mean? The Falcons will play at a higher pace of play.
Definitely.
I agree with all that. I don't want. I
thought you were pressing
long enough
a button to.
Nope,
get
I'm just turning Matthew's mic up.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Or I thought you said
that
you were turning Matthew's mic off.
Secret squirrel.
I'm going to go out with a friend of ours named Chris Brow.
Oh, there you go. Very
nice.
There
hey,
you go. Another
Chris
exclusive.
Brow.
Thanks for the invite, dude.
Another exclusive.
It's not my invite. I can't invite to an invite that I received.
Oh.
Another exclusive.
I didn't get invited to
it
either. That's okay.
My exclusive interview with Daniel Dopp. So no one else was able to know what he was doing tonight, but I got that nugget out of him.
That is very accurate. Really quickly, let me ask you this question.
Okay.
Ezekiel Elliott had, what, 80 some catches this year?
Yeah. Zeke, I think, had 81 or 82.
That's got to come down. Right,
I don't know. I'm not sure why.
I mean, they're designed plays for him. They would throw it just because a lot of those passes, not like overhead passes, right?
Right.
They're like shovel passes, you know, things that count. He's still catching the ball, but
I think he's just so good that he's got a chance to be part of that tier of running backs that redefines how the position is valued going forward.
And that's the way that I look at it. That team is two people, and it's Ezekiel Elliott and it's Amari Cooper, and everybody else is just a
window dressing.
100%. Michael Gallup can do some nice things. Cole Beasley is a fine NFL wide receiver.
We need to be Cole Beasley.
Yeah. So that's my thought.
Cowboys thought, Jerry's World. So we're coming back tomorrow. We've got more sound. We promise you that. And the sound that you heard bits of today will be available in full. So check that out on the podcast stream as well, wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple, whether it's Spotify. Do we have a Spotify thing now?
We got Spotify.
Google Play.
We got it everywhere.
Pandora. Are we on Pandora?
We're on Pandora, yeah.
Look at that.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm waiting for Matthew. Are we on Napster? Do we still have Napster?
Right, yeah. Friendster. Yeah. Check out my Friendster page. Is it on MySpace? Can you play it on my MySpace page?
Looking
MySpace.
Forward to that. In the meantime, one of the unique parts about the Combine is it's a great chance to go meet some people. And so the night times at the Combine is often a time to go and catch up with folks that you haven't seen in a year and hopefully develop some new friendships and relationships. And the goal for us to try to continue to give you guys great content. And that's sort of – some of that is built from having relationships around the league that you can ask people for insight along the way.
Exactly, which is why I'm hanging out with Daniel Dopp.
We'll be back tomorrow. Until then.
Peace out.